So I would like everybody's attention. I would like to offer a small token of a large appreciation to Carol for all her help with the images.
Wow.
I don't think you have that, do you?
No.
It's a text of von Franz's lectures on Nicholas, the Swiss saint.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you for your work. Here and for Windows.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Shall we get rolling? Quick review. Broad scope. We've gone through this whole business of matter and spirit. Remember Elijah and Salome, you know, old man, the young woman, which led to a death, which led to Izdebar, who died. But when we were expecting when he came out that he would be completely transformed. But as soon as he comes out, we kind of hear the same thing all over again. We heard, you know, about the sun, and I'm identified with the sun, and I'm the god. On the one hand, and on the other hand, oops, my soul is in prison. And on the other hand, we heard the two feelings about Christianity that we can't do without it. And on the other hand, what it's asking is impossible, that we imitate Christ. Then we had another death, and making a long story short, as a rebirth, we had images then of the masculine, Atmavictu, the youthful supporter, Telesphorus, and then he starts talking about evil, where evil and good stand in a balance. Now, as I say, I'm about three or four pages ahead of you. Although I have, as I said, I read the whole thing, but I don't remember what I read. I think what we're going to get from now to the end is literally a dictation of what became Jungian psychology. So what I'll try to do, without spending too much time, say, oh, here's an idea he developed into his psychology. And so the text will become a little more linear, yet the pictures will become more vivid. So we'll have to try to figure out what's going on. But so what we left off, I think, in page 309. But I want to just pick up very briefly with 305. First thing to note where we are, which is January 22nd, 1914. The war hadn't started yet. But if I remember correctly, it started in August of 1914. So he's been at this now for probably a couple of months. Not very long, for all the stuff we've seen. This just must have come pouring out of it. The key words that we'll be looking at on 306, see where it says number 2, then skip to the next paragraph. Are war, magic, and religion. I think it's safe, going to be safe to say, I may have to correct myself, but the rest of this book is about those three words. So we'll be looking at war, magic, and religion, and we'll say more about that today. That statement needs to be qualified. The 307, he is talking to his soul, and he is presented with the image of a serpent. That's under the gift of magic. I accept what you say. I want to have fortune and misfortune. Well, then raise your hands and receive what comes to you. What is it? A rod, a black serpent. A black rod formed like a serpent. Now, we're going to find on 308 that serpent is equated to the mystery of life. Why? Because it is not a straight line. It will be equated to the way, very close to the Tao. So you can see it's beginning to anticipate the self and to magic. Now we have to qualify what magic is, but just to alert you to the absolute main themes. Just a couple of incidental points on 307, second column, about two-thirds of the way down. He says, I, you venture a heavy word, what solitude are you asking of me? So just to give you a sense of the emotional atmosphere, that he's afraid this will lock him up in complete solitude. And in a way it did for quite a while. A little farther down, I am happy with the warmth of life. Should I miss it for the sake of magic? So again, he's asking, what is this going to cost my everyday living to be true to this point of view? And again, we'll talk about magic. A little farther down, my heart sinks, and I'm supposed to sacrifice a greater part of my humanity to magic? Just looking at what human response he's giving to the task that's being laid on him. Then those things I mentioned about the way and the mystery, that's on 308, and then we stopped at the top of 309. So hopefully that should give you a jog of memory where we've been. Okay, above is powerful, below is powerful. Very top of 309. We stopped just after that, but I want to pick up there. What I just will point out from time to time is, here is how, or here is an example, I think, of a text which, when he was scouring through alchemy, hit him as being reproduced there. He quotes many times this saying of Hermes Trismegistos. Now, this is alchemical thinking from around the Hellenistic era, about 300-400 AD. That which is below corresponds to that which above, and that which is above corresponds to that which is below. That's from the Emerald Tablet. So this is what I think is going on. He's just pouring out his thoughts. Later he's going to see those thoughts in alchemical texts and mythological references. Now he hadn't, as far as I know, he hadn't read any alchemy at this point.
Okay, so he's not directly referring to the Emerald Tablet.
I don't think so. He didn't even know about alchemy yet. One thing I wanted to mention earlier, and I just skipped over it. Remember we said war, magic, and religion. Now, listen to the first sentence. Oh, so I'm backtracking just for a second. Listen to the first sentence of Mysterium Conjunctionis. The factors which come together in the conjunctio are conceived as opposites, either confronting one another in enmity or attracting one another in love. There is war. Now, it just comes to him as a word, but what he's going to do is see how hateful conflict is as much a component that leads to the self as does love. So again, just to give you a sense of these ideas appearing here very crudely, and then he refines them and then he'll weave them into his psychology. Second italicized paragraph there at the top, just to touch on the main. The poles are united by their intermediate poles in between. Well, up comes the theme of union, the in-between, and anticipation of the self as what mediates the opposites. These are just raw thoughts which he will then later incorporate into his work.
Say that again, the poles in between are the thoughts that come up and the...
Well, that the poles are united by the intermediate poles in between. Mm-hmm. The poles which are united are the conflicting opposites, what he'll later call the opposites, which alchemy seeks to unite, and that there is a process in us which unites them.
That's the intermediate poles are the
process. Yeah. See, nobody had said that. I don't think anybody still says that. So all these are crude expressions of what later become characteristics of the self. And then that's the image. And I'm all ears.
Should we turn the lights out?
Well, sure, why don't
we?
Yeah.
We could read that footnote that describes it.
Okay.
We need a little more.
I'll be done. Just really short. For that image, he makes a reference to the fire of, correct my pronunciation.
I have no idea.
Muspili.
Must be, yeah.
And grasps the tree of life. A cycle is completed, but it is a cycle within the world egg. A strange god, the unnameable god of the solitary, is incubating. New creatures form from the smoke and ashes. In Norse mythology, Muspili is the abode of the fire gods. So we've already talked about he's already made reference to fire gods in Hindu mythology. And how they're a conduit for the creative forces, or the smoke that rises up. And see, that's image 135 that that refers to. Excuse me.
We're not there yet.
Yeah, I made a mistake.
No, you sure?
Yes.
Oh, you're right.
Mistake. That's supposed to, yes. That footnote's supposed to go with image 135. So. Never mind.
This appears to refer to the magic circle in which ritual acts are performed.
Right. So last time we talked about the idea that his dragon, his serpent, is now a sort of tree.
Right.
Because of the scale pattern on it. Mm-hmm. We can't see too well, but if you look at the book,
maybe we should kill the lights now, huh? Can we see it if the lights are?
If you look at the book, you can maybe see it. Yeah, you can see it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The dragon, the scales on the.
Yeah.
Right. If you look at the black as if that's in the shadows, since the illuminating light is behind, what the light illuminates then is the scales on a few of the branches.
Yeah. And then we talked about that energy in the middle having the appearance of plasma.
Right.
Which is also called radiant matter, which sort of has a Jungian ring to it.
We like that.
And it was the last phase of matter discovered, but the most abundant form of matter in the universe. So it's all pervasive, and yet the last one we discovered. And we know the other forms of matter are gas, liquid, and solid.
And what is plasma?
And so this would be a fourth phase of matter, which Anne last time pointed out makes a fourth to the three of the known states.
But plasma, is that, it's like super, super hot?
A collection of charged particles that respond collectively to electromagnetic fields.
Hmm.
And, you know, that's interesting because there was just an article in the paper the other day about that 35-year anniversary of the Explorer, that thing in space is going around, and they anticipate its next move will be through the plasma of
galaxy.
Thank you. Galaxy to the next one. And
no, it's still with. Isn't it still within our solar system?
Yes.
Not the next galaxy, but the next. But leaving our solar system. Am I thinking of what you're thinking?
It's been up there like 30 or 35 years, and it's still within our. I think it's still within our solar system,
right.
But it's going to, they anticipate in the next few years it'll be going through, it'll take a long time to get through this plasma.
Right, it's an Oort cloud, is that it?
I don't know.
So plasma is something in outer space?
Nope. Plasma is many things that are familiar. It's flame, that's plasma, it's lightning, it's nebulae, it's stars, and it's even the empty vastness of space.
Are plasma, flat screen TVs the same thing, I wonder? You ever hear that term?
Yes, plasma TVs.
Mm-hmm.
Must be something mm-hmm. to do with plasma, because plasma is energy that responds to an electromagnetic field. So that sounds like a plasma TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's a good question.
Well, that word plasma is more related to the biological word plasma.
Oh, look at the fluid?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's a fluid. Mm-hmm.
I know, but what I'm saying is maybe plasma TVs are somehow related
to the
biological use of the term.
So it's just a fluid. Mm-hmm.
What is a plasma membrane? What is that?
Plasma is the liquid part of the blood.
Mm-hmm.
Which carries all the nutrients.
And a plasma membrane is a membrane that's in partially pervious, partially impervious to different things, and electrolytes and that kind of thing, isn't it?
That's a good question. I'll ask Mike
what
a plasma TV is.
Yeah, do that. I'm curious.
It reminded me of that picture on your book of that little boy looking through to the inspiration.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
When they talked about the explorers being up there 35 years and then it's about to go to the next
dimension, I don't
know. it really reminded me of that picture, that mm-hmm. boy looking through the to the next, to the beyond, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking plasma with the blood, I was thinking of light.
Mm-hmm. So with the idea that plasma is fire, that brings us down to his idea of the fire god.
Right.
And his statement that a strange god incubates the world, cooking up healing potions.
Yeah, what hits me here is that the fire is turned into a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Or is supporting a tree.
That takes us to the idea in alchemy of the flame tree
mm-hmm.
also.
Mm-hmm.
Because the flame tree is, the fire is the element that organizes the other elements into a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the organizing principle of the elements is fire.
Now what we're going to see is, remember all that stuff about I'm so powerful and the sun is so, you know, dominant, and that's all going to be gone. And I think what has happened is that tree is the antidote. What he's realizing is there's a process of growth that has its own laws. And all this stuff that I've been lauding doesn't play a role in it at all.
So you say this tree is the antidote to the power?
I think so, yeah. And remember, I mean, you can almost hear, I wouldn't say this anywhere else but here, you can almost hear the Nazis in some of that early stuff, you know, this power and the bright sun and domination. And so that was in the collective unconscious and it was in him as well. But that's all gone now. And you get things like, you know, what furthers growth? How do I tend the tree? Realizing there's another process which is bigger than all that stuff that he had seen before. So this is really now the beginning of the birth of the self, I believe, in him, and then he's going to be articulating what he knows into his psychology.
When the tree is grounded in the earth,
yeah,
and then it's up in the
right,
earth.
Right, absolutely,
mm-hmm.
And then it's giving birth to a terrific light, which would be, I think, the insight that is contained in Jungian psychology.
It's almost as if he foretold what's happening, you know, now, the there's so many instances that you see where power is no longer holding up, and our systems are collapsing, and the old values are being questioned.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they say things are going to get even more chaotic until we find a new value system,
mm-hmm.
get reorganized, and it feels like that we're working.
That's what I think.
I keep thinking this definition I would describe of osmosis, where water travels through the leaves, up the stem, and into the leaves by way of osmosis. And that's where the chlorophyll works with the sun, and it gets the leaves.
So keep your ears peeled as we go through this stuff for these new descriptions of this new value system. It's going to be a much different tone than we've heard up to now.
The other thing that occurred to me as we were talking about fire, the fire trees out west especially only give off their cones. Their cones only open up when there's fire.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then that produces new trees.
The red was the giant cypress.
And how close does the fire have to be?
It supposedly can destroy the tree, but it makes them pop.
But will recede? It will recede itself in the ashes.
Isn't that amazing?
The cones only fall when there's fire, or the cones only open once they fall.
Only open in fire.
So the cones could fall into the ground.
Right.
And they won't.
Yeah. And the trees are relatively untouched by the fire.
Right. Oh, are they?
Right.
Okay.
They have to really scar.
Right. That's the force we saw. And of course, but they still were able to open the cones down and receive it.
I think that was one of the things they found out, you know, as they tried to manage forests and they put out all forest fires, that actually some forest fires are beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, if it weren't for us, those fires would be great. We just don't like our houses getting burnt down. But I think fires in and of themselves are highly, well, it's putting nitrogen back into the soil, right?
It's part of nature.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Shall we go on? Lights, please. Now I'm just going to touch on the main points here. Solitary.
So page 309.
After that. After those two passages side by side. Which, again, I'm taking to mean he's realizing that inner process is a solitary process.
And he's referring to that figure of the solitary, right?
Yes.
That he encounters.
But that's who's got the healing, so the healing is an inward process. Remember, Freud, healing is an external process, transference analysis. And he's just getting these thoughts, and I think he's going to weave them into his work.
Was Freud an extrovert? I wonder.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But his psychology was extroverted.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this solitary is going inward, then speaks to him.
Yes.
As if, well, it is a knowledge or wisdom within that.
Right.
And a process.
Right. Flowers sprout around him. That's the growth. I'm skipping a little further. For your sake, he is solitary and waits alone between heaven and earth. That's spirit and matter. For the earth to rise up to him and for heaven to come down to him. So we start examining our relationship to physical reality, and in that relationship we find spiritual guidance. not the other way around.
Not only is it between spirit and matter, but it's also between good and evil.
Before he was talking about good, good, and now what he speaks about is, I think, consistently balanced. This and that, this and that. Skipping a little further. I do not recognize him, the solitary. What is he saying? He says, I suffer fear and distress for the sake of man. I dug up old runes and magical sayings, for words never reach men. That's synchronicity. So magic now is slowly starting to be defined. And the first image he brings us is the runes, which is based on the idea of synchronicity. An oracle. An oracle is like an engineered synchronicity.
Do you think we call something magic because at this very moment in, say, human development, we have no means of understanding?
Absolutely, yeah.
But that as time goes on, as we have come to understand certain things that in the past we considered magical,
yeah,
that in the future they will understand.
Absolutely. He had no way of conceptualizing what he will later understand by transformation. It doesn't follow reason. It is not logically explainable. And the only word he had to go with at this point was magic. So what we're going to see as he goes along is he'll be defining really what magic is. And it's not magic at all. It's just something we don't understand. But he doesn't know that yet. That's how I get it. I think that's the main point of that. Oh, maybe look at this image. And one other
let's see, which one is that? 133?
Right, did I skip? I think I skipped something. That's
133.
Is this the image of the solitude?
Yeah, sorry, that's mm-hmm. that. Right, I skipped something. Right. See the runes?
Yeah, the runes are there.
Yeah.
Well, remind us what the two cones are, Mike.
Where?
You remember how you discovered the image of the two cones in one of Jung's texts?
Well, he's trying to describe spirit, the relationship between spirit and matter, as by two cones whose apices touch and don't touch.
Thank you.
And the runes are just the...
Yeah. Yeah.
So at the bottom we have a little set of runes.
Right.
Sorry, I think my head is in the way.
Is my head in the way?
No, you're good. It's me.
So it looks like someone kneels at an altar. It looks like a human sacrifice this morning. Then someone tries to bring the two cones into relation. And there's some sort of balance, is portrayed, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Looks good to me.
Could you say that again, please?
You want to use the...
Sure.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. So, someone kneels at an altar. Mm-hmm. A human sacrifice is made. I see this as an upside down human being being held by a foot.
Ah. Okay.
And that's the instrument of sacrifice.
Uh-huh.
Then someone tries to bring the two cones into relation. There they are. Remember how those have run through our text, mm-hmm. the two cones?
And Gary says the two cones are the meaningful relationship between spirit.
That's what he said at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then here, it appears some sort of balance.
Mm-hmm. Around the moon, maybe.
Or supported by the moon.
Yeah,
some sort of, there's some sort of balance.
There's also a cross and a crescent there in that last one, which has other implications for Ion.
Mm-hmm.
Or that could be the symbol for the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the Christian cross.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not really a Christian cross because it's an equal.
Right, right. Good cross, right.
Which we've had before.
Those look so similar.
Mm-hmm.
It
looks like a face.
Mm-hmm.
An early emoticon.
Early emoticon. That's funny.
Yes. Sure. Any more on that?
Do we consider the circle at the top a new world view?
Yeah.
Being born.
It's yeah, very dark. But I noticed that the solitary has the two circular areas on the frontal lobe.
Mm-hmm. You've seen that before.
Here you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You've seen that in other images early on.
On the head?
Not on the head, but we've seen those images of those two circles.
You know what that reminds me of? Reminds me of the pictures you see of the devil with its horns shorn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I say that.
Budding horns.
or the opposites within the temporal lobe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, that works.
That's the tears running down the body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of these, the more you stare at it, the more you see in it.
Well, it's interesting that the dialogue he has with this figure about what should happen, whether it should help now or continue its experiment. That's all very
fascinating.
Want
to point something out to us?
Well,
or just the general
tone? The argument that goes back and forth.
Uh huh.
And then at the end of the argument, the figure suddenly announces that it has made a human sacrifice, which the whole flow of the argument goes, and then suddenly, boom,
mm-hmm.
there's that sacrifice sort of jumping out of nowhere, which I thought was
I'm still lacking a piece of your precious flesh.
Where are you? At the right-hand column at the third full paragraph at the bottom. I think that's where the solitary. Yeah.
I did slice in a piece of humanity.
Yeah, my God, how difficult it is to leave the work unfinished for the sake of men, the solitary says.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly says, for the sake of men, I abstain from being a savior. But my potion is completed. Okay, those are all like, whoa, there it goes, really fast. I did not mix in a piece of myself, but a piece of humanity, and behold, it clarified the murky potion. So everything happened so fast, right in that very, very end piece. It just sort of, I suppose that's the way the world works, but
well, when you get the right chemicals in, then the reaction happens.
Yeah, well, the solitary says that it's not going to do that right up until the fact to the place, but it's already done it. That's what surprised me, I think. The solitary says no, that it won't do that. Live for yourself. It doesn't want to leave its work unfinished, it says. But then it takes this action really quickly, which does finish the work.
That reminds me of the process, though, that sometimes something will happen within, and you'll receive it in a dream, but you don't feel it on the outside. It takes a while to come to consciousness or something.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. to become embodied.
Yeah. Well, I would say I agree with that, and the fact that the this is Jung's dialogue with the solitary, and it's almost as though in the dialogue he's only just quickly realizing what the solitary has been up to and has mm-hmm. done, mm-hmm. and suddenly blurts it.
Mm-hmm. And I think what it's asking of him.
Yeah,
that's his flesh.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's Jung's flesh.
Exactly.
Yes.
That it's going to take your pound of flesh to clarify
right.
mm-hmm. the potion that's already been created.
Yeah. Just another quick reference. Fermentation. And then a little farther down, highest opus. I think these are the words he's putting in the place of power. I'm bright as the sun. I'm a powerful hero. Suddenly we've got fermentation, opus, sacrifice.
And those are all out of alchemy, but he has not read alchemy.
No, he hasn't. So you can see how he must have just gone, holy smoly. And then again, I'm just trying to hit the main points as they will appear later in his work. The in-between. The winds in between loosen the crucified. We know wind is, this is the bottom of those three quotes on the second, or three little segments on
the wind in between.
Yeah. On the second column of 309, and where it says, the winds in between loosen the crucified. Mm-hmm. Anybody see that? Mm-hmm.
The winds in between. Oh. Okay.
So winds we know as spirit. In between we know as self. And crucified would be the shift from ego to self.
Okay, that sounds important. Let's have that. Winds in between are?
The wind would be the spirit. This inner capacity of our psyche to guide us. The in between would be the synthesis between the opposites, which is the self. And crucified would be the shift from ego to self. Now, all this you know, but what just hits me is such a different tone to 20 pages ago. That's what you were, I think, referring to.
Now, Jen. Crucified is what, again?
Well, it'd be the shift from ego to self.
Oh, okay.
Now, because we kind of had that with Izdubar, but it didn't really come off. Izdubar came out almost as bad as Siegfried at points. But now, all that stuff is gone.
He had to go back and capture something, some historical element that he had to bring forward from Siegfried, some essence.
Maybe that's
or
it.
From,
yeah, that could
from
be.
From Izdubar.
Yeah, that could be.
And what was something about Izdubar's connection with nature or something like that, wasn't it? I can't remember now.
I don't remember.
It was a different kind of hero. A hero that was made through the sacrifice.
Through defeat.
Right.
The hero made human through defeat.
Right.
But really, Izdubar wasn't made human through defeat.
Right, but I'm wondering if when the new God, because if he was the reconfigured God image, when the new God image comes through, it is pretty big and high. I mean, look at, I mean, I know Christianity started slow, but then boom,
yeah.
You know, that magic moment when everything becomes clarified. And it was huge, and it's been huge for 2,000 years. It's been high and big, and, mm-hmm. and now it's coming down low again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if that isn't the natural process when a new God image explodes into the world.
I don't know whether a new God image, certainly our period of history.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's interesting that, I'm sorry, the four stanzas before that,
yeah.
North, rise, and be gone. And that seems like the, your dominant function.
Uh-huh, right.
You know, so, but that, you go on west, you're...
Where we're all headed.
West on the map, Roger.
It would be left if you were facing north.
Somehow west and east, west must be your, you spread yourself out would be the intuitive or the feeling function, right? And west would be thinking. I'm not sure. I just, those four lines just seem to be kind of the
same. I'm definitely with you on north. West often has to do with second, you know, sun setting.
The end.
The end.
Mm-hmm. Where east is the dawn.
Where east is the dawn. And, you know, what good is all that macho on your deathbed? So, retire.
Gary, this was Jung's dreams and active imagination. So, potentially, Istvar being the hero that came through defeat and then turning back to power could have been a reaction to something Jung was doing.
Could have been. Yeah, it didn't quite take.
But it took better than the Siegfried image, which he was getting strictly from literature and the yeah. collective.
Mm-hmm.
And in Isdabar, he found a much more personal
mm-hmm.
Connection to the hero god, the sun god, that resonated with him. So it took a little better for a while.
Yes, absolutely. We got another picture? Ready? Or you want to say more?
Well, I just think this whole discussion with the solitary really underlines his idea that that man's consciousness is essential in the whole process. Because he convinces it to sort of change course in
mm-hmm.
a way.
Mm-hmm. So I think here, that solitary is dictating Jungian psychology. In a very, very raw form. He's just getting thoughts, thoughts, thoughts. But we couldn't have gotten to this point unless we'd worked through everything before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to continue when the solitary's voice is picked up by Philemon. You know, like Mozart said, somebody asked him how he wrote music. He said he just took dictation. I think Jung is just taking dictation here.
Yeah, Schumann said that.
Did he really?
As well.
Yeah.
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 And Brahms used to just start a piece and then let it go because he knew the unconscious was working on it. And months later, he would come back to it and it would be all written.
Months later.
And he would just write it down.
Wow.
Because he knew that inner creative process was working on it while he was doing other things. I love that about him.
Yeah.
Did he carry all that in his head for that?
He let it go. He just let it go. He trusted the inner process.
So he didn't write it down initially?
Just the beginning phrase. And when he would come back, it would all be written. I know, hard to believe, but...
It would be nice if books were free for some people.
Well, that's what we're seeing. And we're seeing that inner process. Just give it to them. That's the spirit. Okay, anything else? I don't want to rush you, but we'll move on. Do you have any other comments? This is the picture.
That is image 135, where he makes reference to footnote 248.
I should bring a flashlight in so you guys could read stuff. Can you read what the footnote says again?
He says, about this image, he says, the fire musically, the fire comes out of musically and grasps the tree of life. The cycle is completed, but it is the cycle within the world egg. A strange god, the unnameable god of the solitary, is incubating it. It's not in the egg, it's incubating the egg. New creatures form from the smoke and ashes. In Norse mythology, Muspeli is the abode of the fire god.
It's like you have the tree we had before,
mm-hmm.
and you have that mandala, or that bright spot, but all this now has been added.
Right. And it looks like that former, that plasma area seems to be really writhing with those images he's called the creative forces.
Uh-huh.
They swarm. They're creating a real swarm around it.
Is that another snake? It's green at the left of that yellow.
Could we turn the light on again?
That looks more like a tortoise, if I recall.
Oh, okay.
That center creature on the bottom has that face that was assigned to death previously. Mm-hmm. Remember that face?
Mm-hmm.
There's a salamander or a dinosaur
or
something.
Here, you mean?
To the left, right in front of
some sort of lizard.
In front of the tortoise.
The gray one?
Yeah.
In the foreground?
Somebody better.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Here, you mean?
Yeah.
And then almost dinosaur-like creatures.
Mm-hmm. And look how they're growing really out of the roots of the tree.
Mm-hmm. I like the way there's a mountain valley that's fading.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting placement, I think, of that image. Well, most artists might be tempted to have that higher up in the image. And of course the valley itself is associated with that serpent in Tao. And he's called this serpent the magic, the snake, the Tao, the way.
Mm-hmm.
And the snake is the shining valley serpent, which is the path of Tao.
Mm-hmm.
Does that snake have legs? Six legs?
Remember that image? We've seen mm-hmm. that before, the death image, where he was black with the arms coming.
Yeah, at times the serpent has more dragon-like features, and then other times it has snake-like features.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's got its arms, they're almost more like tentacles now,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to actual dragon-like arms.
On the victor's end,
there's
lights, right?
Right, on
mm-hmm.
the victor. Mm-hmm. Almost looked like a cross.
Mm-hmm.
So his serpent, his reptilian,
right.
Transforms itself. And it takes on different appearances. But if this is Atma Victu, it's sort of haloed by that orange circle. So it's within its center, its head is centered on the center.
It's got a cute little spike on it.
I wondered if that was a flame.
Where
the little spike on the serpent's head.
Right there.
To me, that's like a flame, but that could be my own.
Could be.
I don't remember, what did our former death head have? Did it have anything? Did it have like a series of spines?
Do you remember what number that was?
Pretty early in
the work going
proceedings.
Back?
Yeah,
we could look at it. We could look in the Carl.
Maybe look in the book, yeah.
Towards the front, Carl.
What do you mean by the front?
Well,
how far back?
Where's
that?
before that, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Am I crazy?
Well, we're all crazy.
That's not the rhetorical.
It's a question of whether we can function or not.
Four is the bar?
Yeah. There it is. Oh, there's another picture of it too, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
That prior to this?
Uh-huh.
What number are you at?
The one we just saw was 29.
I think I'm going to move back the other way.
You think it's the other way?
Uh-huh, I think so. From there.
Well, Travis, stretch your mold. Keep looking and pick up.
Yeah.
Maybe it's easier, Carol, if you look.
Moha.
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 Yeah, he's got a little moha.
So where he encounters the sea of blood and death. Remember that, Gary?
Well.
Wait a minute. I think I enjoy it. That's the one we just saw in the book.
Atmavik 2 is where we start seeing the little fat boy that...
Guys, you can play around with here if you want. Okay.
I think they have to have a conversation.
I'll be right back.
Gary, try 214. Or no, how about 211? 211. That's kind of the serpent with all the arms. See, it's about 208 that mm-hmm. he starts talking about Atmaviktu. Or 206, that serpent is there with all
right.
the arms.
I gotta remember. Let's see.
I gotta run out and get my